Good morning. Families, eh? A mixed bag of experiences. It's in our families that we learn how to rub shoulders with people. We learn about irritating and being irritated. We learn about how to annoy and how to be annoyed. We learn to live together. We rub shoulders and we rub each other up the wrong way, and we learn about being offended, and we learn how to offend and deal with one another. At this point in time, we're looking at Joseph's revenge. And what I'd like to do is, first off, talk to my brother Stuart, who might be looking online, and I'd like to apologize because it was me who crushed your cigarette packet that you hid under your bed, and you know, you were annoying at the time, but that's not an excuse, and so I knew you hid it under there, and so I just turned the packet so it stood upright, and then I sat on your bed, and then I looked and saw it didn't really do much, so I squashed it and put it back under there. So I'm not going to buy you another packet of cigarettes, but I will buy you a few coffees from time to time, okay? And I was also the one that put the needle holes through your cigarettes as well. So when you couldn't smoke. It was a healthy option for you anyway, yeah. So I'm glad that I've got that off my chest, and I feel so much lighter for telling my brother Stuart that all is good. Christmas presents will be raised another notch this year. We're all a result of our experiences and how we respond to them. When we're at home, as we're growing up, and we leave home, We choose what we take with us. And so the positive things, we see what we do at home and say, yes, I like that. I like the way we celebrate birthdays and on Christmases. And then the negative things, we might say, you know, I don't like bad language in home. I'm not going to make my home like that. I'm going to keep short accounts of that. And so I'll reject that and try to change that in my new household. But there's some traits that are inherited that we don't realize that we've got a choice. If you look at Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, if you look at their stories, all of them have lies and a sense of deception and deceit and a way to get ahead. They tell untruths to move their way forward. And that was like a family trait that followed on right down the line. Now we've been following the life of Joseph and his emotional roller coaster ride through life. His rejections and being thrown in a pit and then being thrown in prison and then his advances and the things that elevated him. And he became the head of the prison and organized the prison. And then he organized Potiphar's house. And then he organized the whole of Egypt. Now, it's been a while. It was 17. Joseph was 17 when his brothers sold him into slavery. And it was 13 years with Potiphar and being in prison and then the rise to meeting Pharaoh. He was 30 when he became second in charge of Egypt, when he told Pharaoh's dream of the seven plentiful years, the bounty years, and then you've got to prepare for the 7 years of famine and need. And so Pharaoh elevated him up to the second in charge, and he organized the collection of the grain. And there was he wrote down, started off writing down the numbers, and then the numbers just got too big. He just said, I've given up counting. We're just creating all these storage cities around Egypt, and we will distribute them when it comes time for the famine. So our story picks up. It's about 2 years into the famine. So Joseph was 30 when he started his job. There were 7 years of plenty. And then about 1 or 2 years, he would have been 37 or 38 years old when his world was turned upside down. Now, he was busy administrating and looking after all the collection points. Pharaoh gave him a wife, and he had 2 boys. And one of the boys was Manasseh. And Manasseh sounds like the Hebrew word for forget. The Lord has helped me forget what my past hurts and anger and my disappointments and scars from the past. God has helped me forget. And the second child was Ephraim. And that sounds like the Hebrew word for twice fruitful. So Joseph had a new life. It was filled with purpose and meaning and focus. He was busy and he was engaged in saving the country of Egypt, but also, it turned out, saving the wider world as well. So we're looking at Joseph. He's at the cultural center of the known world. And I'd like you to zoom out from Joseph, move 400 kilometers east, and zoom back in to Jacob's household. It was not the civilized center of the known world, but it was almost like the Wild West of the known world, almost like the western suburbs compared to other parts of Australia. And so we zoom in on Jacob's household. And I love the Bible. It's so real and earthy and raw. Jacob is there, and it's as though he clips his sons around the ear holes and said, "What are you doing standing around like a bunch of buffheads and looking at each other? We're in the middle of a crisis here. We've got to do something. There's a famine going on in the world. Get yourself down into Egypt and buy some grain." So they went off and went to Egypt in search of grain. But just notice the scarring in Jacob's household as well. He holds on to the younger brother, Benjamin. He doesn't want him to come under any possibility of being hurt or harmed. And so Benjamin is left at home. Joseph's full brother, a brother by Rachel. And Rachel was the favored wife of Jacob. Now, it would have taken about 3 weeks to get from Canaan all the way to Egypt, about a 6-week turnaround between going down to Egypt and coming back in. And you can just imagine 10 men with their donkeys in slow motion coming into Egypt, the main distribution center at that time, and they dusted themselves off to make themselves presentable as they go in to the most civilized place in the known world, and here's them all dusty and dirty from their trips. And as they entered, Joseph immediately recognizes them. And I don't know what his emotional state would have been there. All these triggers would have been going off in his mind. These are the guys that threw me and discarded me and rejected me and pushed me off to another land. I can't imagine what he would have feeling. But here's Joseph's chance to retaliate, to react, and to enact revenge. But he pretended not to know them. And I suppose this was easy because he looked like an Egyptian. He shaved his beard and he dressed like an Egyptian. He talked like an Egyptian. He walked like an Egyptian. You were all thinking it anyway, weren't you? Everything about him was Egyptian. And so he even spoke through interpreters to his brothers. So they didn't have a clue. And as they bowed before him, he remembered the dreams from 22 years before. 22 years. And remember, God had helped him to forget those hurtful times. He'd sort of moved on. But seeing these brothers brought back all these emotions 22 years ago, where the brother's sheaves of wheat bowed down to his sheave of wheat, where the sun and the moon and the stars, 12 stars, bowed down to him. But it wasn't quite right. Not all the places, not all the stars were in place, or the sun or the moon, that wasn't in place either. There's people missing. And so this dream or vision that he had as a teenager, it wasn't fulfilled at this point in time. Jacob, his dad, was missing. Leah, who would have been his adopted stepmom auntie, was missing. And Benjamin, his full brother, was missing as well. Erica showed a video a few weeks ago about justice. And you can see the gifts there of when the abused has an opportunity to become the abuser and to get their own back, to get karma into the situation. And that picture just grabbed my attention in my mind. And out of all the video, that was the thing that hit home to me. This was Joseph's opportunity to enact revenge. He had the power to do whatever he liked. He could strike them all dead on the spot. But he had other purposes in mind. He doesn't act as we'd expect. He wants to know if they've changed, if there's been a change in their demeanor. And so he accused them, "You're spies, you're scouts, you're here to spy out the land, you're seeing if you can take advantage of Egypt." You see, Egyptians didn't like the Semites. Semites? Yes, and they are the Arab-speaking nations, the Canaanites. And so they had a term for them that they were called sand dwellers or throat slitters. So they realized that these guys were the rednecks of society, and they were wild and uncivilized, and they couldn't handle any respectable way of interaction. And their response, the brothers' response, "We're not spies, we're all from the same family. We're not a gang of individuals who've come together to do wrong by you. We're from the same man, of the same family. We're 12 brothers, and the youngest is with his dad back in Canaan, and the other one is no more. The NET version of the Bible said, he's no longer alive. I don't know why they said that. Why did they say there were 12 brothers? Why not say there were 10 brothers? That would have been telling the truth. Was it because they were rattled? Because they were feeling some guilt, fear, shame? They were definitely under pressure. And so Joseph proposes a test for them. He wanted to keep Simeon, or keep one of the brothers, as a captive while the others went and got the younger brother. Now, the reason before this, will the other brothers abandon this brother who's going to be held captive? Are they going to abandon them like they abandoned me, Joseph? And the second part of the test is Benjamin being treated right? Well, they agreed to this proposition. And the brothers said, surely we're being punished because of what we did to Joseph. They were remorseful, but they didn't know they had to show remorse to Joseph. But Joseph was standing there in their presence, and he listened to them. 22 years of unresolved guilt, lies and awkwardness, unresolved offenses in our lives impact us whether we like it or not. Whether you're the offended or the offender, the abused or the abuser, the one that was hurt or the one that actually did the hurt, it impacted everyone in this story. Jacob, Benjamin, 400 kilometers away, they were reaping the consequences of an act 22 years ago. Benjamin would have felt constricted and confined and hemmed in by this overprotective father. This overprotective father would have felt fear and hurt and grief and trying to hold on what he had. And so Joseph, the brothers, Dad, Benjamin, all of them were suffering and hurting. And the 9 brothers returned home. They thought that God was against them. They returned home better off than when they came, because Joseph had put their silver back into their sacks. In school, there was a resiliency program called the Resiliency Donut. And one of the sayings I liked from there is the definition of resilience by Andrew Fuller. Resilience is the happy knack of being able to bungee jump through life. So as you go through life and you hit a bump in the road, an offense or something like that, you get stretched and then you bounce back and you keep going. And then you hit another bump in the road, another learning experience, and you get stretched again. And sometimes the stretch can stay stretched for a long period of time. And sometimes it's hard to bounce back and be resilient. But it's good to know, I think Joseph had this in mind. He knew that God was in control. He knew the person on the other side of the elastic, of the bungee cord. God was holding him. God was supporting him through his life. And he could see God at work all the way through. He had to be patient. He had to persevere. He had to wait for God to act. But God never let him down. And it's good to know that God has given us hope to find a way through the difficult challenges and hurts that we come across. I like the fact that Annette contrasted her experience with her brother's experience. And when you look at Joseph and his brothers, what happened to Joseph? He was proactive, he was busy, he was focused and productive. He stood strong, he was willing to forgive, and he realized that he had hope and meaning because God had given him a job to do. What were the brothers doing? Even 20 years after the event, they were standing around looking at each other in the middle of a famine, saying, "What do we do now?" And they were lost. They fell apart. The least bit of pressure, they went back through their history and said, "Oh, it must have been what we did to Joseph so many years ago. We're being punished." They had a victim mentality. They couldn't move forward. They ignored and swept things under the carpet and left it to fester. Now, I'd like you to think about a house. A house, you've got to maintain a house. If you get scratches on the gyprock, you've got to fix it up. If the woodwork gets scratches or unpolished, chip in the window, whatever. Over time, a house slowly degrades. And we've got to keep repairing the house to keep it in decent condition. If we don't continually repair and keep the house in a decent order, then you'll come a time where you need to reconstruct the house from the ground up. It needs major work. And that's what's happened in Joseph's life. He's kept short accounts with his relationships. And when the opportunity does come up that he can enact revenge, he decides instead to work with his brothers and see where they're at and see if he can encourage them along. His brothers needed a whole new reconstruction. But God's in the business of reconstruction. He can help us to restore relationships. When we bring our relationships before him, he can point us in the right way how to see the person who's hurt us or offended us, or to see how we can make amends to the people that we have hurt. The frustrating thing about Genesis chapter 42 is there's no conclusions, there's no reconciliation yet, but there's works in play, and things are about to change. Have a think about, are there things that need some repair work in your lives, in your relationships, in the things that you are going through, and realize that God is there holding the other end of your bungee cord. In John 10, here's the assurances that we can have, the hope that we have in God. John 10, no one can snatch us out of our Father's hand. In Romans 8, nothing can separate us from God's love, no matter what experience you're going through. In Ephesians 2, God gives us purpose and meaning to do his will. And in Micah, it says we should love mercy and walk with God. And that's a surefire way to build resilience in our lives, to go God's way. So it's not so much about judgment or judging or enacting revenge on someone else as about having God's view and building resilience in our lives. Let's pray, and we'll say goodbye to our online viewers, and we'll pray, and then we'll enter a time of communion. Heavenly Father, we thank you for your love, your great love that sustains us through many trials and tribulations. I thank you that we can lean on you and depend on you. And even though we might feel at the end of our rope, it's so good to know that you're on the other side and you help us to hang on. And I just pray for your perspective on our relationships that we have in our lives. And I pray that you might lead and guide us and help us to interact with people who have hurt us or the people that we have hurt so that we can live peaceably with you. And so, Lord, I commit everyone in this room into your loving hands. In Jesus' name.